Hello all, welcome to Up the podcast made by the fans, for the fans. Grab yourself a drink, put your feet up and listen in. And by the way, there could be some strong language.
Welcome everybody to Up the podcast, by the fans, for the fans, another week. Today we have Ashley, John, Dell, Charlie, Lods, and of course me, Harry, six out of the seven hosts today. It's a pretty full room. We have a few topics for you today. We're recording this after the Spalding versus Posh and Posh West Brom games. We'll be focusing primarily on Spalding v Posh because, of course, we could actually go to that one and watch it. Following that, we'll also have some time to discuss the upcoming season in the GH display stand and whether we might get it permanently. Should we move there permanently? I know we've got some disagreement in the group over that. We've got some conversation points over the commentary going back to BBC Cams after one season on Posh Plus and what Posh Plus can do essentially to try and make it more engaging and get more people involved and actually want to purchase a subscription for it. And we've also got the new kit, which was announced over the course of the last week. It's a map design, for those who haven't seen it, with a white trim down the sides and a navy blue collar. Without further ado, Spalding v Posh. Ash, I know you were there. Talk me through the game, mate.
I think that it was clear to see that there was the gulf in class. I think that we sort of stuck to our principles. Obviously, there was a few rotations and differences from the game at Wimbledon. We had different players playing with each other, which was good. But one thing that was quite interesting was the Manny and Nevitt pairing. Nevitt, again, I think he's shone through. I think he's shown everybody that was there that he is going to be a fantastic footballer. Manny seemed to struggle a little bit, though. I think that definitely within the group, the common theme is he probably would have been sent off if it was a EFL fixture or a cup fixture. But ultimately, I think that our quality started to show through after sort of the first 10 minutes. I think frustrations from me again were Ricky and Malik both being offside far too often. I think it's a basic thing of a striker to keep yourself onside. It's not that difficult. But all in all, good to see us score lots of goals in pre-season. No complaints from me.
Yeah, I thought Kean Hayes looked really good as well. I mean, I think those pre-season games are often just about fitness. But you can see a player's attitude actually in those games because you can tell the players that, okay, are just doing it for the fitness element, or players that actually really want to go out and impress and impress Posh fans. And I mean, Kean Hayes played his socks off in that second half. He was electric, running, chasing everything, pressing hard, making stuff happen. So yeah, I was a huge Kean Hayes fan in that game. I thought he was fantastic. And also, just on the point of Nevitt, on the opening podcast, I said that Nevitt was I thought he was a bit, you know, not physical enough. He hadn't grown into his body enough. But actually, seeing him in person, he actually looks pretty good physically. So maybe he is an option. I've been very impressed with him since my statement on him on the opening podcast.
Yeah, I think I agree with both the points Ashley and Charlie have made. Nevitt looks very, very good. It's hard to judge the players based on that performance because, like Ashley said, Spalding were pretty diabolical. I think their keeper got subbed off because he was that bad in the second half. Manny, though, again, I agree with Ash. I don't really understand how he's managed to get away with that. He made a debatable red card challenge quite early on in the first half and got booked for it, which is quite unheard of in a friendly. And then 10 minutes later, he did exactly the same thing and then made another five or six fouls throughout the half as well on top of that. Standout performers, like Charlie said, Kean Hayes, definitely. And I think Odo showed a lot of energy in the second half. And then one other performance I think is worth talking about is Ricky. Seemed to struggle in front of goal again. I think he missed a couple of real clear-cut chances, which, given the opposition, is slightly worrying.
Do you know, I actually Most of that I do agree with, but I do think that a few of you have been a little bit too nice. I thought Manny was fucking dog shit. He weren't just bad, he was awful against a really poor opposition. Nevitt, yeah, you know, obviously the opposition was what it is, but Nevitt, I actually quite like the look of him. I like the look of Hayes, and probably I like the look of the new guys. If anything that did stand out, it was the old guard. You can't really call them, do you know what I mean, from last season's team that didn't look too great. Ricky looked really poor. Mothersill, as you say, was offside a few times. But with Mothersill, to be fair, I did see a few things from him that think, yeah, actually, you know, sort out your offside things. You could be the player for this season, which I'm quite looking forward to. And I did like Adoya, whatever his name is, Oda. Ibby, do they call him, whatever his name is, down the wing. He looks a little tricky. He looks like the one that's going to entertain us this season. He looked, I like the look of him. Nippy, getting into positions. And yeah, I think he's the one to entertain us. Because we need an entertainer, don't we? Because we haven't really got anybody, but he'll be the one this season. So overall, it was a friendly, nothing spectacular. Some of the new guys, in summary, some of the new guys, yeah, I like the look of them. The old guys, they need to pull their finger out. And that's me, really.
Yeah, I think basically we're fairly unanimous in our views of the performances across the pitch, really. There is two bits of play from Nevitt which really caught my eye. One was when he was back to goal in his own box and he managed to shimmy away from a Spalding player under pressure and sort of just played it out across his own box, straight into the fullback, relieved all the pressure, received the ball again and then gave it again. I was really impressed with that. And then there was a run, I think it was midway through the first half, where he sort of drove quite powerfully into the Spalding half. And it really reminded me of Ronnie Edwards' run at Leighton Orient. I don't know if anyone remembers that run. Really impressive. And I found them stylistically really similar. Now, with Nevitt, the test is going to come against big physical opponents. I remember when Ronnie came through, one of his first games was against Plymouth, and he came up against Ryan Hardy, and Plymouth won 4-0 that night, and Ronnie got ragdolled, completely ragdolled. And my fear is that Nevitt, obviously the same could happen to him, as particularly in his first few months before he's been in a gym program and really got with the sports science team. So there's going to be tougher tests for him, but on the ball, you could see his quality. Hayes was the other one of the new signings that really impressed. I thought he was really, really good. But again, he's going to come up against better defenders, so it's hard to judge on that. I thought Con Clark and Adebisi were obviously the other two new signings that we haven't touched on. Neither, there's a reason we haven't touched on them, because I didn't think either of them really did too much. Con Clark did one flick through to Ricky, which was quite impressive. And then, as Ashley said, Ricky missed the one-on-one, which was a pretty bad finish, to be honest. And that is a concern. But the other one I wanted to mention, who's kind of like a new signing, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but was Donny O'Brien Brady. I thought he did his chances no harm of really staking a claim for that spot in the number six position. I do have my concerns about it, in the sense that, you know, he's only really played at under 21 level as a number 10. And now we're looking at him as a first team option in a new position. So I do have some reticence about doing that, because I don't see him in training, but it's a tough ask, you know, to step up to League One level in a completely new position. So I would ideally like another centre mid to come in, I think, and him be sort of fifth choice, and maybe loan him out. We've talked about loans on another episode, and that's maybe where he gets his learning curve and we see if he can perform in that position rather than our own team. But he put in a really encouraging performance, and I thought he was one of the better players on the pitch. So if he keeps doing this in pre-season, I think there is an argument that he could force his way into the squad.
Yeah, I think I agree on that. He's clearly got the confidence. Obviously, Harry mentioned in our first episode that he had, or maybe it was the second one, like a really good, positive interview when he joined the club. So I think that his attitude's there. I think that he's willing to learn. Like we've discussed before, Fergie's probably the best person to learn from, rather than going out on a loan, in my opinion. And then the only other person sort of that I would like to sort of bring up is Wakeling. I think that he's had a really strong start to pre-season. Obviously he had a difficult season last season with lots of injuries, and also being cup tied in the BSM, that would have probably been where he would have got his game time. and then obviously had injuries in the second half of the season. But he's looked positive, and potentially an option going into the new season.
One other thing I just want to mention, Randall's goal. There was so many times last season where he was trying to sort of finesse and place the shot, and I think that was doing his finishing a lot of harm. Whereas the goal against Spalding, he absolutely levered that. And I reckon one of his shortcomings is his finishing. And if he can lever some shots more often, he might get a few more goals and get a lot less criticism from us next season.
Fantastic. All right. Good to hear from you all, gents. It was after a 7-0 win against Spalding on Tuesday night this week just gone, where Wakeling got two, Hayes got two, Mother Seal, Adjaboy and Randall rounded up the scoring. Moving on. This week, Darren McAntony put on Twitter an ask to the fans when they go into the GH display stand, which they're going to have open half and half, or as much as half and half this season, to behave themselves with the view that hopefully we'll get the whole stand. Tell me, Charlie, what do you think? Do you want us to move into the GH display permanently?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think it is by far the best facility we have in our stadium. I mean, the family stand, the main stand in London Road, just whatever you say about the sentimentality of it, the actual quality of the stands, the quality of the concourse is just not as good. And there's also an element for obviously me personally. I have obviously a brother in a wheelchair, and the disabled facilities in the GH display stand, I'd say are probably the best in League One. Like they're really, really good. You know, you're inside, you're covered, you're at the top. It's a really, really good view of the game. You have your own little concourse bit inside. It's top quality. And it feels like not giving that to posh fans in the posh stadium is a massive waste of that facility. So that's sort of my main angle for wanting to get it open is for the disabled fans that currently, if it rains, they have none of the disabled areas in the rest of the ground are actually covered. So if it rains, they just get drenched and everyone moves up the stand in the family in the main stand. But then there's the poor disabled fans at the front getting absolutely soaked. So yeah, that's sort of my personal reason for wanting it open. But generally, just to improve the atmosphere, and because the facilities are so much better, I think posh fans have to do everything they can this season to try and behave well and to try and get it open on a regular basis.
Yeah, completely agree. I was in the GH display for the Oxford second leg playoff game last season. While for a lot of it, the atmosphere was amazing, it also went way too far. I was on the right-hand side. I could see people obviously throwing flares into the pitch after we scored, which completely slowed everything down, gave Oxford a chance to breathe. I saw people fighting with each other. I saw people shouting at the stewards in ways that were beyond anything that we'd really want to see. And I can understand as well, as funny as it might be to see a video on Twitter afterwards of a flare being let off on the concourse when we've beaten Cambridge 5-0, we're playing against Oxford in the playoff semi-final. I know at that point we were 2-1 down on aggregate, but still, I think another flare got set off. It's going to be taken off us, or at the very most, we're only going to go in it some of the time unless we learn to behave ourselves as a fan base. We can still do 80, 90% of what we want to do, or what people are doing right now anyway. Just don't pick fights with the stewards and damage the stand by setting off flares inside it. I think the atmosphere it generates for the whole ground is amazing when we're all in there. We all saw it for the 5-0 Cambridge game. And I want to be in there permanently, personally. I would move us from London Road. But yeah, sounds like we've got some proving to do this season to get there.
Yeah, was it the Portsmouth game when Ferguson came out afterwards and said he thinks the reason we lost was because Pompey had that full stand? And I get the impression that the atmosphere does help the performance on the pitch. But like Harry's alluded to there, it's about finding the right balance. Those 5 minutes in that stand after Knight scored in the playoff semi is probably the best atmosphere I've ever experienced at a home game. albeit it didn't last very long. I don't think the flares necessarily ruined that moment, but you can understand the club being a bit hesitant given us the full stand, given the flares going on the pitch. And like Harry said, the concourse for that game and the Cambridge game, it was just impossible to do anything. So if anyone wanted a drink, you wouldn't have been able to get one, no chance, because it's just, it was absolutely full of kids bouncing around, throwing flares, singing. You would have been safer to just stay in your seat.
My biggest issue with the whole GH argument is that we have had season tickets in there before. And this was many moons ago, pre-COVID. I've had a season ticket in there, sat just up where the screen is. I don't really understand what's changed now versus 5 years ago. And that's sort of my biggest thing. Now, don't get me wrong, I probably wouldn't be going in there. I like to watch football from the side of the pitch. I don't really like to be behind the goal. I went in there for the Carlisle game with my mum. Imogen was there. Tom was there with his daughter as well. I just didn't really enjoy the view of the pitch. I like to watch football. I like to be able to get a good view of the pitch. So I don't disagree that you could watch football. I just think that the people that are going in there need to be the people that want to make it a good atmosphere and bring the atmosphere into the ground, which is not personally something I'm not bothered about the atmosphere at London Road. I don't go to London Road to listen to people singing songs. I like to watch football.
What's changed in the last 5 years, I'd say, is that since COVID particularly, there has been another cultural revival of the Football League among young people. It's become a thing to go do for 60 to 20 year olds in a way that it wasn't pre-COVID. And I think that part of the social media effect is massive for that. It's why there are so many young fans in that stand. I agree with you. We probably wouldn't have sold out season tickets in that stand pre-COVID, but I genuinely do think we would now.
You know, I agree with what you just said, Harry. There is a different element of youngsters now. But for all, I don't think they want to go out and just be little shits for the sake of it. I think this is our new generation. This is going to be the future for Peterborough, for Cambridge, whatever team they support. However, with social media, they just need to sort of like take a little step back, look at what reaction is going to happen after their consequences. You know what I mean? Sorry, what consequences are going to be for their actions? And that's a little bit worrying where, you know, some of these kids are going to get banning orders at a young age and miss all the, some of the good times, because some of the better times is when you are young, if that makes sense. As far as sitting in a GH stand, what a load of fuck off. No, stick to London Road, right? That's where we are. Let the away fans have half of it. If some of you want to go there, that's fine, but don't move it into the home end permanently and move London Road in for the away fans, because I will be proper pissed off. And also, just what Ash said a little while ago is we did, yeah, it was about 5 years before COVID when we used to sell season tickets for the Moyes End stand. It didn't have a really big take up on it, did it? You know, so I can see why the club then moved it, so let it have to wait. If we could split it 50-50, so we do have an element of home fans in there, so we've got a bit of home fans in all ends of the grounds, then fine. But, you know, as a few of you already alluded to, the behaviour has got to improve. The youngsters, and it is predominantly youngsters, just need to calm down a little bit. Chill out, it's a football match. We go and watch a football. We don't go to football to look how old we are on fucking social media or TikTok, whatever. All right. So that's as far as I'm concerned, I'll never buy a ticket there. Leave me in London Road.
I do somewhat disagree with Dale there. I've never been a fan of acting a tit and looking hard in front of other football fans or any of that. But I think we all enjoy football in different ways. And what Harry's made a good point there, we've got a lot of young fans that have come through since COVID. I think the club have recognised that as well. They are the future. We can fill up these empty stands that have been empty for the last decade with these kids as they grow older and more generations come through. So we should be doing whatever we can to appeal to them. And if opening that stand makes them enjoy their experience of going to games more, then we probably should do that. But like I previously said, it's just finding the balance to make sure that they're not doing anything illegal or harming to the other fans that are watching the games.
I get that, lads. But you say you like fill these empty stands, but what's been happening lately is when the GH has been open for Peterborough fans, we're just moving fans from London Road into the GH. And also when we had the main stand a few times in the last couple of years when we've had Block D's open for home fans, all we've done is just moved it from other places. It's not been new fans. It's been, you know, fans that have been going, what's the word I'm fucking looking for? It's been fans literally just moving a season ticket from London Road to D. But anyway, so we need to find more rather than just move them. It's all right saying, oh, look, we filled the GH and look at London Road and the family stands emptied. What sort of marketing is that? It's not. It's just like moving. It's like in business, you move a problem to a different place. You're just moving a problem. And all we're doing is moving people. We're not making it any better.
Say you've got a 13-year-old posh fan called Timmy, and he's taking his school friends to the game, and they're all stood in the London Road end, and it's quite quiet, and there's not a lot going on. And he goes to school on the Monday morning, and he says, oh, did you guys have a good time? And they'll go, no, it was rubbish, it was boring, it was crap. Or Timmy could take them to the East End, and they can act a tit, and they can all enjoy themselves. And then 10 friends will enjoy themselves that much that they'll take 10 friends each. That's how the club will grow their fan base.
I do sort of agree with Lods in the sense that what we do know is that since fans have been back into the stadium after COVID, is that our attendances are growing. We will need somewhere to put these people. And I think that it's important that they don't end up in the D&E blocks of the main stand, because that is not a luxury. No, sorry, it's the A and B block, isn't it, up the other end, rather than the D and E block. The D block's my end. Is that we don't want our home fans in our shed, basically, and that's what we have. We have two shed ends, the London Road end. Everybody blames the roof, but it's not the roof. It's just the facilities and all that goes with it. It's the same with the main stand, because people blame the roof, but I can hear away fans when they fill out that section. So I think that it's important that we have those facilities so that we can, like Lodge says, Timmy brings his mate. He wants his mate to have a good time and he wants his mate to come back. That's why I try to bring my mates along. They enjoy coming and sitting on the wooden seats with me. But we're going to need somewhere to put these people, because we're not getting a new stadium, are we?
Yeah, and I would just like to say that this genuinely is a thing. Like, obviously, I'm 17. I go to school. Like, this is a thing. There are people at my school who only go to games if they can go in the GH display stand, because they don't enjoy anything else. And I've spoken to them and I've been like, oh, do you not want to go for the football? And they say, no, we only want to go in that stand because the atmosphere is great and we enjoy watching the football. But actually, we will literally only attend the game if we can go in that stand, because it's not an enjoyable experience for young people in the London Road end or the main stand or the family stand. Young people want to stand up. They want to be able to move about. They want to sing. They want to have a good time with a group of mates where they don't feel like they've got old people turning around and giving them the death look at all the time, like you would have in the family stand, for example. So this is a genuine thing. And if you want to inspire the next generation of posh fans, this is the main way to accommodate them and make them feel like they are valued as a Peterborough United supporter.
Right, start off, Charlie. I don't turn around and give anybody any shit, all right? And I'm in London Road. So just a quick one. Where did you start watching, Harry? What stand did you start in?
Family stand, when I was 11, with my parents.
Lods?
Pretty much the terrace.
Okay. Ash?
I have actually only ever had season tickets in B block, C block, or in the GH, yeah, for a couple of seasons. So
the bottom line is, we've not all, like, you know, we all have to start somewhere. And back in the day when I first started going, a long time ago, people didn't like come because, oh, look at stand I'm going to be in. They come because it's like Peterborough United. They want to support the team or follow your mates and follow the team. Not because I've got a nice toilet I can piss or shit in. You know, you go to London Road, it's disgusting. It is vile. But if you're going to go to a ground because of, oh, look how nice it is, fucking hell, go to the cricket or something. All right, football is football, and you go because of the game, not because of where you sit, stand, or fucking talk to your mates in. Anyway, stay in London Road. That's my last stay on it.
There's one unifying thing here I'd say before we move on, which, to Dell's credit, and Ash, I think you touched on this point as well, fundamentally, if we had more fans, would have to be in the GH display anyway, no matter what. And the answer is to increase the attendances overall to make sure that we need all our fans all the time.
One last thing before we move on. Sorry, one last thing. You know, we say about the attendances going up. One thing that really fucking grates my shit is the attendance we announce is always incorrect. The attendance we announce is always how many tickets we've either sold or give away, not the actual people that go through the turnstile. You know, how many times have I said, oh, look, we've got like 8,000 here. We know, we're not stupid. There's about 4,000 there for a cup game or something because the stands are empty. Once we start doing it accurately, and it's not only us, I think lots of other teams do now, Arsenal, it's fact, Ash, you can sit there laughing, it's fact, right? The thing is, let's just record who goes through the turnstile. There used to be, when I was a ball boy, just as you go through the tunnel on the left-hand side, there used to be like a big machine. And every time the turnstile went round, this number used to go round and it told you factually how many people was in the ground. But we need to get away from this. Oh, look, the attendance is 10,000 when we know there's only about six there. But anyway, I'll move on now. That's what we need to do.
Cheers, Dale. Good conversation, guys. Right, next up, this week, it was announced after one season, our commentary will be taken over by BBC Cams. Oh, sorry, I should have said after one season of it being on Posh's own app, Posh Plus. This was billed as being a project that would lead the way and that in the next 10 years, we would see the majority of clubs take their commentary in-house. And clearly, after a year, we've decided to reverse course and go back to BBC Cams. I suppose a question. I mean, Dell, do you have any strong thoughts on the commentary situation and the Posh Plus app in general?
Yeah, I do. First of all, what the fuck is Poshcast? I mean, Poshcast? That's us. What is Posh Plus? What is the point? What is the point of paying for it? You know, mate, I can't even get my words out because I think it's just disgusting. What is the point of Posh Plus? You know, people pay their money. What do you really get out of it is a genuine question. As far as the commentary, you know, the big hoo-ha they made about it last year when they moved out to go to PCR or whatever this and do it their online is the efforts they made. We even like, didn't we have old people coming into the club so we could show them how to use the tablets or whatever. Basically, we've backtracked so much, it's unbelievable. And all this fucking flannel of, yeah, it's the right thing to do at this time. No, we fucked up last year, simple as that. Absolute simple as that. We should have left it with BBC Cambridgeshire. They do a decent job. Whether we like them being positive, negative or not, the thing is they're factual. We've got, am I right in thinking Zach Sequani is going to be on it every week? Excellent. So I like him. Superb. You know, from a legend of the club, he'll tell you whether it's good, he'll tell you whether it's bad or indifferent. Superb. But as far as Posh Plus, I'm really not a fan of it. I've never paid for it. I don't see what you get from your, what value you get from your money, apart from the repetitive like interviews with the same questions all the time. A bit like us. I'm joking. So what is Posh Plus? Someone tell me.
I mean, I will defend Posh Plus as a concept here. I think that it's actually, if it's used in the right way, which it has been in the past, it's really good for fans that are actually like Peterborough United nerds, basically, people that actually want to see inside the training camp, people that want to hear what Fergie has to say on a more regular basis, people that want to know about the players' personalities and stuff. You know, it's a very useful tool for that. And some of the content that has been on there over the last, you know, 2 years or whatever since it sort of came about has been really positive. You know, Pitchside Posh is a feature that I always really enjoy. I think, you know, you get to see the game from a really different aspect. You get to sort of see what it would be like when you're on the side of the pitch. I like that. And then I like, you know, last preseason, for example, they did something great where they mic'd up Fergie for one of the preseason games. And that was a fascinating piece of content and a really good insight for me. So I think Posh Plus, if it's used right, can be a fantastic tool for the club. So I think what is Posh Plus? It's definitely a way for the club to sort of share with their fans. And I understand it coming at cost. You know, I'm not saying that it shouldn't come at cost. It costs money to run, so it's only right that it costs money to buy. But I do think that they raised the price last summer, I think. It was £4.50, now it's £6.50 a month. And Darren McAntony said on TalkSport, he said that, you know, in the next He said, "We the reason we've done this commentary thing is because we're expanding Posh Plus. We're going to have a TV documentary on there. We're going to have a podcast on there." If I look at Posh Plus today compared to how it was a year ago with this extra investment and going in-house, one thing I sort of don't see is how it's developed over the last year. And I think it would have to be, there has to be some new stuff on there. Otherwise, the price has to decrease, because £6.50 a month, the increased price, we now don't have the in-house commentary. I think, while I will defend the concept to the death, because I like the concept of Posh Plus, I do think the content has been led astray in the last few months, potentially.
So basically, for £6.95 a month, which is, I don't know, 100 quid, is it, for a year, you get to see one good bit of content where Fergie is mic'd up.
No, I mean, there is good content on there regularly. There is, you know, Pitch Shy Posh comes out after every Posh win. That is good content. I enjoy that. And that's pieces of content that I watch back. You know, you get full match replays of the games if you have Posh Plus. I, again, like to watch full games back, or at least watch back halves, or look for moments in games that I've picked up on that I don't think that aren't in the highlights reels, but I'm like, oh, I'd actually quite like to see that again. So I do think there is definitely a benefit to that.
Sorry, Charlie. So am I right in thinking this new Sky deal we've got coming out this year, can we not watch every game?
Not every game. You can watch more games. I can't remember the exact number, but they've committed to...
It's going to be about half.
Yeah, it's going to be about half the games. But you could never watch Posh Plus on a Saturday for 20 games. You could never watch Posh Plus on a Saturday, you know, at 3 p.m. in the UK anyway, or at least you weren't supposed to be able to. So I think that actually live streaming of games is not actually the purpose of Posh Plus. It is what I saw. Posh Plus was, you know, that was like iFollow that has transferred over to under the name of Posh Plus. For me, Posh Plus is the behind the scenes content. It's the pitch side Posh. It's the full match replays. It's basically the extended view into the Peterborough United camp, into Peterborough United football games. And I think that is a good thing. And I'm more than happy to pay an amount every month to see that. I think that is a worthwhile spending of my money.
Okay, do you know what, Charlie? You put your point across really well. I disagree with it. I ain't paying for it. Anyway, that's my view.
So I think that the problem with Posh Plus is that it's got a little bit stale at the moment. We went through a period of about 3 weeks where every piece of content that seemed to get uploaded was an A to Z or a first and last. And I think that that's sort of where we're at with it, is that it needs some fresh ideas. It needs something new. It needs something that's going to drag people in. Like Charlie said, the Fergie mic'd up was probably one of the best pieces of content that has happened in the last year. That's not to say that there hasn't been some fantastic stuff, like some of the footage that came out of the Cambridge result. Some of the pitch side poshes are always good. I think that it just needs something adding to it, like maybe a little bit of extra drive. I don't know, because I've not got that creative mind, but it just needs something to keep it fresh and keep it in a good rotation rather than the same thing coming out over and over again.
Well, that's it, isn't it? People will, over time. I mean, the phrase in the restaurant industry is vote with their feet, as in they just won't come back. And if the content is stale, people will just stop paying their £6.50 over time. I've got it. I had it last season. And to their credit, what I find a bit confusing is that last summer I thought the content was excellent. As we said, we had that thing with Fergie. Some of the interviews I thought were really good. I've mentioned on the last podcast that I thought Donayo Brian Brady's interview was really good, and things like that. I appreciate they're still on there, but yeah, I agree that at the minute I'm not as engaged and I'm not finding them as interesting. And I think they just need to come up with some new ideas, particularly during pre-season, to keep things interesting, because it naturally becomes more interesting when you've got the games on and you've got things like Potside Plus. And I really enjoy watching the extended highlights. I will watch them every single time, even if I was at the game. I will watch, you know, that euphoria hit of the pitch side posh with the shot, with the camera behind the goal, and the goal goes in at that end is so good. And I'm happy to pay for it. It might seem like a lot of money to someone like Dell, or just, you know, you wouldn't even pay a pound for it, and that's fine. And There's no way of knowing how many people are interested, but I'd like to think that they can get more people in with a bit more variety.
I don't necessarily agree that it should be behind a paywall, but I think Posh Plus is for the younger generation, similar to what we were saying about the East Stand. It's interesting to see that Dell doesn't necessarily like Posh Plus as the token old person on the podcast, but Charlie, the token young person on the podcast, is a big fan of it. Probably just goes to highlight that we're living in a world now where young people on social media will absorb all of the content that the club puts out, and their job is to just make sure they've got £6.50's worth going out to appeal to that target market.
So I can offer some professional insight here, because obviously I've done a little bit in the industry, and with my job I'm signed up to Tottenham and Liverpool's offerings. They're not that good either. I think what happens a lot with professional football clubs is everyone is very media trained now. So you are reliant on the characters being in your football squad to make content engaging, right? They're not trained actors. So some of them are going to be better at interviews than others. And obviously in past season, we've had people like Frankie Kent and Sammy Smodics, who were great in front of the camera and could produce funny content. And they were very easy to produce content around. I don't think we have a huge amount of those characters now. And the other thing is, we're talking about Fergie being mic'd up, which was definitely a great episode. But I'm not convinced Fergie particularly would be delighted with the whole world seeing him say, fuck off, H again. It's, you know, that line has become quite used amongst Posh fans. Everyone knows that, right? So they're very protective, football clubs, and particularly managers, of what happens and what happens behind closed doors. And you need a team that are very open. So Southgate, you know, was very, very open with the media and got them in the England team. But some managers aren't like that. And I think what people need to realise is it's not as simple as just, you know, we can film all this training session, because the club can be quite protective and we don't know what happens behind closed doors. With all that said, at the minute, I don't think Posh Plus is brilliant value for money. I don't think, like people have said, the interviews are that engaging. The content seems a little bit like repeated, a lot of A to Zs, a lot of the same questions being answered. And there is room for a little bit more creativity with it. But I do have some sympathy with the media team, because it's not as simple as some people think, particularly in the modern day world where clubs are very protective of what goes out.
Yeah, I think, like John said, maybe it is a case of probably expecting a little bit too much. You do go through that dry patch, similar to what we've discussed ourselves as the podcast, is that once the season starts, does everything then become a little bit easier? But when I sort of compare where we were and what we were getting this time last year versus what we're getting this year, it does feel like we're a little bit behind. But hopefully, as our marketing manager said in a tweet to me, said hopefully we've got some new content on the way, and hopefully that'll engage everybody again and bring everybody back in.
Absolutely, and I'm with you as well. I want to see it good. Doesn't serve anyone to just bash it. I want to be getting my money's worth, and hopefully the new content that's on the way is of a higher standard. Appreciating what John said as well about the fact that there are constraints on the club and we can't necessarily expect it to be absolutely top tier stuff, given what they can and can't do and the constraints of what the playing staff and the coaching staff want. All right, moving on. This week, Peterborough United, Posh announced their new home kit for the season. As I prefaced at the beginning of the episode, and maybe I'll put some pressure on our editor, if you're watching this on YouTube, to have a shot of the kit come up on screen as I'm saying this, but it is a map kit. There is a built into the main body of the kit is a map of Peterborough, of most of PE2, I would think, from in the top right-hand corner where the ground is to a lot of the rest of the south of the river. And there's a white trim on either side of the on the side of the body, and there's a navy blue collar. Now, we had our gut reactions together as a podcast about offline about who liked it and who didn't. And I believe at the beginning there was only two of us who liked it, and that was me. And I actually forget who the other person was. Maybe one of the people can help me out. It was Ash, I think. Ash was the other one. Has anyone changed their mind? Lods, have you changed your mind?
Yeah, I have to admit, when the kit was first released and we got the initial photos and the launch video, I wasn't a fan. And then it wasn't until we saw some pictures of the shirts in real life that I realized the shirt looks completely different to how they look in the videos and the photo. I don't really understand what happened there. Joe's a very good photographer. And I'm sure it wasn't the camera settings that did that. We did have the same problem with, I don't know if the training kit, when that came out, the video made the color look very different as well. So I don't know if it's just the way we edit our videos, but it looked kind of like an aqua color, I thought, when it first came out. But it is standard blue that we normally have. And I have changed my mind. I do like the kit now. I've seen it on players and in person. The only thing I think is worth pointing out, and a lot of people have mentioned this online, the navy collar doesn't go with the white sides. So I think if the sides were navy as well, or the collar was white, I think it would look a much, much better kit. It's quite funny, actually, because I think we all knew it was going to be a map, didn't we, before it was released. And I spent a good 20, 30 minutes on our group chat trying to work out where the map was, with no help whatsoever from anyone, until Ashley came on and said, the badge is where the stadium is. And then we all collectively went, oh. And I think the thing that was throwing me off of that was that the train line is the same colour as the road. So if anyone listening is trying to work out that, then there's your clue.
So, yeah, like Lod said, I actually didn't like it when I saw the first video and first photos at 9 o'clock, but I managed to get myself a little bit of a sneak peek and managed to pick it up before it was on sale, and then I obviously sent some photos into the group. I think that we live in the world, and it sort of goes back to the Posh Plus thing. How have we managed to get it wrong in our launch, in our photos, where we've made a blue color become aqua and look like it's something that's come from the sea? You only get one chance to make a first impression. And I think that we maybe made a little bit of a mistake on that. And actually, then there's lots of people that have done backtracking on it. Like I said, I didn't like it. And then I saw it half an hour later in the flesh. And then it's grown on me ever since. Like, again, I don't just want to agree with Lods, but I think that maybe if the navy was white or the white was navy, that solves a hell of a lot of the problems and the clashes. I don't think that we need three colours on a home kit. I think it should have just been the two, but it's definitely a grower for me, and I'm happy with it now, and I'm ready for it to be our home kit and be another memorable kit.
I think it's worth pointing out the video they did release was a good production. I appreciate the idea behind it with all of the different parts of the city and the different fans representing diversity, but it probably should have just focused on the kit a little bit more. Was kind of what I was getting at there, because it didn't come across in the video, the actual kit itself.
So it seems like every topic we've been speaking about today, I've been a negative Nelly. Not trying to be like that. It's just factually, it's how I feel. I'm not a fan of the kit, and I'm a little bit disappointed, because the concept of having a map of Peterborough PE2 on a shirt sounded like really good when we heard about it before it being launched. And then having it come out and seeing it, I just don't like it. The white bits down the side, what's the point? The blue collar, what's the point when you've got white? You know, I just don't like it. The positive is it's got a sew-on badge rather than a stick-on badge, I do believe. I think the concept was a really, really good one, but I just think we've executed it so badly, and I really don't like it. I like plain kits. Go back to the Stephen Taylor kit from a few years back, the red socks, blue, navy blue, something plain. I like plain, maybe because I'm old and whatever, but keep it simple. Kiss, keep it simple. And I think we've just gone a bit too leery. But no, I'm not a fan of it at all. Having said that, to give some credit, I am a major, massive fan of the, is it the second kit or the third kit, the one that you modelled for us? Yeah, the one that Charlie's wearing. I really like that kit. It's plain, you know. It's got a bit of history with the old badge, the nice collar. You know, it's simple. And I think that is a lot better than the home kit. I'm not one for buying kits, but if I did and I had to buy one of the two, it would be what Charlie's wearing. That's my take on it.
Yeah, I mean, the club have absolutely smashed it out of the park with this sort of retro, clean, sort of creamy white kit. Unbelievable. One of my, I think it's probably my favourite posh kit ever. I've had, you know, literally as soon as it came out, I went, oh my God, I've got to order that, and ordered it straight away because, yeah, awesome, awesome kit. But old and young are going to unite finally on the podcast, because I'm with Dell here. I'm not a fan of that home kit at all. I think, you know, I was expecting something insane, because you think about Dara McAntony's video where he said, you know, it's the best home shirt he's seen in 50 years at the club and blah, blah, blah. I was expecting to be absolutely blown away. And then I looked at it, and obviously sort of the colouring on the photos didn't help and made it look even worse. But even in person, I thought, you know, I'm not a huge lover of it. I think, you know, looking at it, looks slightly better on the players, but then all kits look better on the players because, you know, they're the model athletes, and it definitely looks better than them than on the fans, unfortunately. But even so, I think the white is a bit weird down the sides. The collar is very weird, and it's sort of blue socks, blue shorts. That there's no white sort of down the side of the shorts, so that white sort of on the side of the shirt just doesn't really seep into anywhere. It just cuts off. It's a bit weird. Not a fan at all.
So my point that I will make on the kits is that I think that a fantastic kit comes in hindsight. If I remember back to this time last year, people weren't a fan of last year's home kit, and then all of a sudden we had some iconic moments in it. Cambridge, obviously 5-0 with one of Bristol Street Motors in that kit. If you think back to the black kit that we wore at Old Trafford, that became an iconic kit because we've won in it. I think that people's opinions on this kit will change depending on whether we ultimately go on to have a successful season or not. If we end up in a 9th or 10th place, it just becomes a kit that just goes on the back burner and nobody ever talks about. If we end up winning the league, or we get an automatic promotion, or win the playoffs in it, again, then it becomes something that people love. I think that the only other memorable kit is the one-off kit that we wore against Cardiff. Obviously, that was 4-0 down at halftime, and then we bring it back to 4-0. That's a memorable kit for me because it was a one-off, and it was a memorable game where we've turned over a 4-0 at halftime to bring it back to 4-0.
Very quickly, that one, that game was my daughter's first ever game. 4-0 down, and if I remember rightly, it was really, really cold as well, wasn't it? 4-0 down, she wanted to go home. I said, no, you never leave a game early. And obviously we drew 4-0, and she expected every game to be like that moving forward. She was bitterly disappointed. And I saw it quite off there.
Amazing. I love that, though. What a great way to start your time as a Peterborough fan. Mine was a 1-1 with Leighton Orient in League Two. Yeah, John, I mean, do you think it's the best kit in 50 years? And if not, what would you be picking?
I don't think it's the best kit in 50 years. I do think I've changed my opinion completely on it, to be honest. I know on the graphic we produced on our social media account on Twitter, I said I didn't like it. I've ended up buying it. So I've changed my mind completely. And I think, like the other guys have said, it was a little bit of a fail on the marketing department, potentially, that we didn't quite just... amplify the shirt to its greatest showing and attract sales, because actually it looks better in a lot of the photos that fans have taken than the ones that the club produced. So yeah, maybe something to look at next year. But I really like the kit. I think it's really good. But not my favourite. Not my favourite for 50 years. My favourite is probably the 08 season one, the blue one with the white sort of sash going through the middle of it. Loved it. Obviously it was a great season for Posh as well, so you've got happy memories related with that kit, closely followed by our Argentina away kit. I love that, and I would love the club to bring back that Argentina away kit next year. So if you're listening, Dara, you've got a guaranteed sale from me if you bring back the Argentina kit or a variant of it next year.
For those watching on YouTube, if John moves his head, you'll be able to see the kit he's referring to, which George Boyd is kindly modeling. And you know what? It's funny because Ash has got behind him the away kit from last season with Ricky doing the snake at Derby away. I thought that was an amazing, amazing kit as well. I also, there's one final thing I wanted to say on this, which is that I've been pillorying the club for having the stick-on badge for 5+ years now. I've said I won't buy a kit that has a stick-on badge. And thankfully, I like this one. I absolutely will be buying it. I just need to go in and see whether I'm a medium or a large, because I've put on a bit of weight since I was since the last couple of years. But yeah, I'm all in. Also, we can ask the fans as well. You know, what do people think about the kit? Anyone listening, please leave a comment on whatever you're watching this on that you're able to comment on, whether it be clicking on the link through Twitter to get onto Spotify or Apple Podcasts, or if you're watching this on YouTube, tell us what you think of the new home map kit. I think we can wrap up there. Just a small comment on West Brom versus Peterborough, which was at the West Brom versus Posh, which was at the St. George's Park. It was behind closed doors. We've seen Odo's goal, but that is more or less about it. Does anyone really have a comment to make on this before we wrap it up for the day? John, any comments?
Yeah, I don't think, like you say, this is very hard to comment too much on a behind closed doors friendly that we haven't seen. But I think from the clip, you can immediately see that we're not changing our style of play at all this season. It's actually a really well taken goal and a well worked goal. Builds up from Adjaboy, who does a really good bit of play on the edge of his own box under pressure. Goes into the goalkeeper and then back into Nevitt, who advances the ball downfield. And then it was a great ball. I'm not sure actually who played got the assist, but it was a lovely pass through, and Odo took it really well. So plenty to be encouraged by there. Obviously, the result didn't go in our favour, but you can't deduce too much from pre-season friendly results. But West Brom put out a strong team, and we certainly weren't outplayed, but judging by the scoreline. Still got a few additions to make to that team, so you'd like to think that we will get a little bit stronger too. So it was relatively encouraging what we did saw. I did see. I thought.
Yeah, I'd agree with John. Like, it was really satisfying to watch that ball go all the way from right to left, through the box as well. Obviously, Billy Kapich was involved, I think, with moving it across. So that was nice to see. My one concern is that I think that in a Football League game is that that goal gets chalked off. Ricky appeared to be offside again, make another offside run. Odo's then made an absolutely rapid run through and obviously taking a good finish as well. So I think that what we are seeing is the inconsistencies. I think that Harley Mills, like John said, got the assist for that one. He wasn't fantastic at Spalding, but I would have said that he was really good against Wimbledon. So it's clear that we're going to see a little bit of up and down as we grow into the season.
All right. I think we're there. Thank you, everyone, for listening. This week coming up in between now and when we record our next podcast, we've got Boston away. Other podcast hosts, who's going to Boston? Hands up. I'll speak it out. Ashley's going. Dell's going. Charlie's going. Nice. We'll have a bit of representation there. And then Cole Yu on Saturday.
Stanford Friday, mate.
And Stanford Friday as well. I was about to mention that, Dell.
Well, you went off on a tangent.
But yeah, thank you everyone for listening. We've been Up the Poshcast. Thank you. We'll catch you next week. Up the Posh.
Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Up the Poshcast. Let us know your feedback. Give us any ideas for topics you would like to discuss or any questions you'd like us to answer. Up the Poshcast.
Up the Posh.
You have to fucking ruin it, didn't you?